there. It's Ari Rosenbaum with another episode of that 401k podcast, or as I would call it, the little podcast that could. Today, we're going to talk to a good friend of mine, and hopefully it'll be a good friend of yours in the near future, Dan Venturi from Brightworks. He's going to tell us a little bit about what he does over there, his background in the retirement plan business. And he was a presenting sponsor of that 401k conference that we had a couple weeks back at Wrigley Field. So we're going to talk to him about that as well. We're going to talk to Dan in a minute or so. Before we get to Dan, I want to speak about the 401k conference. That 401k conference, our next event is going to be at Citizens Bank Park in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Friday, November 9th, from 9 to 2, $75, early bird registration available directly at that401ksite.com. 4 hours of content, lunch, a stadium tour, meet and greet with former Philly Larry Anderson, who's also the current radio voice. And the other guest is a good friend of Tommy Lasorda, who is the Philly fanatic. That 401k conference, like I said, getting great reviews on the Chicago conference. We got some good reviews out of the original event at Citi Field. We next hit Philadelphia. We're going to have a lot of providers that presented in the past, and we have some new ones. More details can be found on that 401k site. So I'm here with my good friend Dan Venturi from Brightworks. Dan, glad you could be here.
Thanks, Ari. Good afternoon. Hope you're doing well, sir.
So first things first, Brightworks, what do you exactly do? Because for me, working with you for the last couple of years, it changes on the day. Well, maybe not changes on the day, but changes every now and then.
True. I mean, when we first started together, I was a consultant over at Willis, which is now Willis Towers Watson. It happens to be a fairly huge consulting firm doing transactional due diligence. Private equity firms probably see anywhere from 200 to 300 transactions a year, and we tell folks, you know, what the problems were, if any, with their retirement plans. It was sort of in that gauntlet that we realized a couple of things. One, that folks coming out of a transaction found themselves in very different roles than they had before the transaction, particularly on the HR side. So you had payroll folks that now were suddenly running HR departments. Quite frankly, the last thing they were thinking about was putting together or keeping a compliant retirement program. So from, you know, the derivation of looking to keep private equity firms or portfolio companies compliant, we jumped into the 316 world. The other thing that was relevant at that point, and it's funny how things, you know, it's kind of like bell-bottom jeans. Things come back around over and over again.
Bell-bottom jeans have never really come back. I still deny that. I mean, you know, to me, ruffled shirts, leisure suits. I mean, I've seen bell-bottoms here and there, but I don't think that they've come back that full in style. But that's my
opinion. You never broke them back out, bud?
I don't remember. I think I've seen pictures of me wearing one. I mean, I have a picture of me wearing a red leisure suit, and I've never worn a leisure suit again. But bell bottoms, I mean, I've seen them in, you know, vintage stores, but I haven't really seen them come out full, you know, come back fully.
Well, we're products of the 70s, so we all have those pictures. You got those corduroy pictures too, I bet, somewhere.
Hey, I had corduroy pants in law school, you know, for the winter months. Not a great look, but I actually like them.
Well, so I guess like corduroys and turtlenecks, yeah. The MEP, right? The open MEP is the other element of our background. And, you know, me and you talked about it. I want to say you actually wrote an opinion letter that, led to us getting direct corporate approval to start all this. Fortunately, we all know what happened shortly after that, right? Those folks.
Our friends, yeah, our friends, they're actually not our friends, but, you know, that advisory opinion, which I just wrote a blog piece, will probably go up in the next couple weeks about it. It's still, you know, 6 years later, you know, you're supposed to, you know, give up and deal with things and get over things. And I still think that advisory opinion letter, that's not something I'm going to get over ever.
Cost us all
a lot of money when you think about it.
It did. We might save this for another podcast, but it's coming back.
Yeah, we'll probably maybe the next week's topic, because you know what, I entertained some questions. You know, people asked me questions, and you know, the one question I got out of my 3,000 followers were about maps. So we might schedule that next week about that.
Sounds good. So I mean, going back to the history of BrightWorks, those were really the two drivers. And from that background, we, you know, became a full-fledged, I quit my day job, so to speak, and we became a full-fledged standalone 316. We recently brought the TPA function in-house, so now we can do standalone TPA work as well as 316. Bundled, unbundled plans, 403Bs, you name it, we have the ability to do it. The one thing, Arian, we've talked about this too in the past, and you know, some of you folks that have been to Ari's conferences have heard this as well. The thing I think that primarily distinguishes us from the field is the fact that we take on liability for the payroll. You know, I think there are a handful of shops out there that do that, and do it honestly and genuinely, meaning it's written into the contract. So, you know, you talk to most audit firms, they'll tell you 80-85% of the errors are gremlins found in that payroll. So if your 316 isn't touching that, then I really think you should question the services that you're getting, or more to the point, the services you're bringing to your client, the plan sponsor. You know, I have there's stories of a firm out here in New York on the East Coast where Ari and I are, that claims to be a 316, but within its service contract specifically says it's not a fiduciary. So I always find that to be interesting, you know, how you could separate yourself from that.
Well, yeah, I mean, contractually, people could say anything they want. I mean, I'll never forget the producing TPA out in New York. They're not here anymore, but they actually, you know, had an RIA service. And they actually put in their contracts, we're not a fiduciary, which, you know, a court is actually not really going to care, because it's not just contractually, it's also, you know, how you actually operate. So it's funny that, you know, the job of a 316 administrator really is to be the day-to-day administrator of the plan, is a fiduciary, and you could disclaim it all you want, you can a contract, but if, you know, facts and circumstances show that you're acting in a fiduciary, that's not really going to save you that much.
Yep. If it walks and quacks like a duck, it's a duck, right?
Yeah, I mean, you've seen, you know, the 316 marketplace, and I think the biggest problem that I have is the same thing with the TPA market. Anybody could take out a sign and say, hi, I'm a 316, and there's no, you know, background for it, because, you know, dealing with a financial advisor or an auditor or a risk attorney, you know, there's licensing, there's backgrounds that you gotta, you know, deal with. And my concern always is, having, you know, dealt with the Matt Hutchinson situation, somebody coming out of the blue and saying, you know what, I'm going to be a 316 administrator, and you know, you don't know their background. And of course, the Vantage situation, where you had a TPA doing the 316 work, and you know, they're accused of stealing money from these plans. Yep. And, you know, yep. Yeah, you know, those are the problems. But outside of that, what else do you see that, you know, really is something that not only do advisors, but also plan sponsors really have to look at when they're picking a 316?
Well, I mean, to your point, you want to see some sort of, you know, competency in keeping a plan compliant, right? I mean, I think what's different about the BrightWorks platform is you know, we don't claim to be an attorney, but we're pretty fluent in ERISA-ese, as you like to call it. You know, so there's a certain pedigree in terms of keeping a plan compliant. The other thing I think you want to be leery of is paying a little, you know, too little, so to speak. You know, I think we're all in the world of racing to the bottom in terms of fees. And, you know, everyone just looks at that bottom line number. You have to question what you're getting for 5 basis points if that's what the 316 is charging. I can tell you firsthand that you're not getting value at that price point. You know, reasonably priced 316s are coming in anywhere from 20 to 10 basis points, depending upon the size of the plan. So what are you getting for 5 basis points? You know, folks are doing mailings for you. Folks are signing off on loans. There's a lot of stuff that's sort of getting recategorized as 316 work that was sort of always under, say, a bundled platform. So I would say really look at what you're being promised. Look at the cost, obviously, and make sure you have somebody read the contract and you know, have certainty that your client is taking on a company that will act as a proxy for them and take on that fiduciary liability operationally, you know, soup to nuts.
So, one thing people always ask me, you know, Ari, you're an ERISA attorney. Do you do TPA work? And I always say, God, no, I don't want to do that. So why did you decide as a standalone 316 administrator to take into that TPA work? Because I always say being a TPA, you know, it's a lot of work. You only get blamed when things go wrong and you don't get the credit when things are really running efficiently. So why did you decide as a 316 to bring it in-house?
The market, we found that the market's kind of really blurry. The client doesn't understand what a 316 does at this point. Oftentimes, I think we're miscategorized as a TPA. So it's sort of one of those, you know, and we all remember the famous Bill Parcells quote, right, about buying the groceries and doing the cooking.
Which always gets me into trouble, and which is why I'm no longer a synagogue vice president, because I always used to cite that term, you know? If I'm going to cook the food, exactly. I should have a say in how the groceries are bought. And they said, you know what, take your groceries elsewhere. Yes. I'm going to take my groceries elsewhere.
You know, I've got a friend of mine who's a private chef. And this amazed me. Aside from the fact that they were getting paid, you know, an ungodly hourly rate, they also get a cut of the grocery spend, right? So if they go out and they spend $500 on food, they get a percentage of that.
That's unreal.
Yeah, it blew me away. Blew me away.
Wow.
But I guess going back to your point, I mean it. The folks that we brought in to do the work were standalone, you know, TPA folks. They worked in a standalone TPA shop. You know, so it's an internal thing. There's somewhat of a firewall still between the two sides, but it was more an adjustment, I think, to the marketplace. You know, and an added versatility that we were able to bring to the firm. That made it an appealing decision for us.
Sure. So let's talk about that 401k conference at Wrigley Field. Actually, first, where could people find out more information about Brightworks? You know, you got to put in a cheap plug there.
Well, you can go to www.brightworks.com. There's a web that's our website. You can request some additional information there. Or you can call our 800 number, which is 866-316-7326. So if you're an advisor out there or a plan sponsor is listening that wants a little bit more information, give us a call. We'll run you through the program, the platform. We've got some proprietary software that helps us scrub, you know, the payrolls. That's pretty unique. We've got some stuff coming online here in Q4 that auditors are going to love in terms of helping them sort through stuff. So give us a call and, you know, let us help protect your client. I mean, ultimately, you know, if you're in the advisor world, something goes wrong, they're coming back to you. So get somebody on that wall that can keep the client safe and make sure that relationship's protected.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I always say. You always have advisors. Back in the old days, you know, going back 10 years, nobody really cared which TPA they're going to get, which gets picked. And quite honestly, one of the biggest reasons I've ever seen an advisor get fired is because they recommended a bad TPA. And so, you know, your advisor, you got to make sure you got some good players on your team, which are, you know, other TPAs. Because, again, when they complain, they don't complain to the TPA. People are passive aggressive. So when plan sponsor has a problem with the TPA, they're going to complain to the advisor first.
Say it all the time.
Exactly. So let's go back to that 401k conference. We're coming off of Wrigley. I still have not recovered from it. It's already more than a week ago. And I think the reason I didn't recover from it is because I came back Thursday night, and then Saturday, because the Mets were in town and Fenway, my family and I drove up and down to Fenway that day on Saturday to watch the game. So I still have not fully recovered from that. But what are your thoughts about that 401k conference at Wrigley Field?
Well, first of all, that was an incredible couple of days for you as a baseball historian, right? Wrigley and Fenway within the same week?
Well, I mean, I've been to Fenway before because I went to school at BU and Boston University for my tax LLM, so I lived like three blocks away, so I would see, a handful of games. Not, you know, I should have seen more, but, you know, I've been there. My kids haven't. My wife has, but it's been like 18 years since I've been there.
So Jason had a heck of a weekend, right?
Yes, my son had a heck of a week. The funniest thing about him, I have to say, is Jason, he has me when I go to the other stadiums. I actually have to buy him a T-shirt. So I had to, when I was in Chicago, I had to get him a Murphy shirt and a Bryant shirt. And then with the Red Sox, I have to get a Mookie Betts shirt. And then he won't wear it at school. I don't know. I don't think the kids are bothering him. But, you know, he stays loyal to the Mets. So it's like he's got to wear them on the weekends.
Smart kid. You taught him well, Ari.
I don't know about that. But, yeah, he had a great time. You know, it's just a funny story that I always tell him that, you know, I was always a big baseball fan. My father took me to exactly one game at Shea Stadium. That's it. All my life. Because he didn't like
one
baseball.
One game, huh?
What?
One game, that's all you got.
One game is all I got.
One game.
One game is all I got because he was European born. He didn't understand baseball. He thought it was a boring game. He liked soccer. What are the guys standing around? You know, I don't understand. You know, it's a boring game. And the only time we went, my father's an electrical contractor. The only time he went is because we used to get every year four tickets. And they're in 87, April 87, his partner and son were going to the game. So I guess he decided to go with me. But
I remember that year well, coming off the World Series.
Yeah, let's not, I try to forget 87, except I'm still a big fan of Terry Leach because of his 11-1 in 87. So yeah, I always told Jason, I said, my father took me to one game. I've taken to one game in Chicago. Jason's been to eight stadiums already. 8 out of 30.
Wow.
I mean, wow. I didn't go to my first non-New York stadium when I was 25 and I went to Fenway.
He's way ahead of the curve, bud.
Exactly. But besides that, we had the game, which on Wednesday night, which was great. Seats were good. It was a great experience. And then the next day we had the conference, you know.
Yeah, the stadium tour was awesome. If out there in advisor world, if you haven't been to one of these conferences, go. It was an amazing event. All right, put together a heck of a show. You know, the content was timely. It was informative. It was there. The folks that were there are going to help your practice. Great networking. But the best part, honestly, you know, for all you guys that were born in the 70s, grew up watching 80s baseball, the Hawk, Andre Dawson was there. Ari got the Hawk there.
Yeah, that was thanks to my good friend Larry Davis. He books the athletes for me through, he used to work at Steiner, and he's an advisor too. But he was able to, it was just luck of it to get Andre, because originally we had talked about Lee Smith, and that fell through, and then he's like, oh, well, Andre's going to be Tom. I'm like, okay, let's go with Andre Dawson. How often do you get a Hall of Famer to appear at your events? I mean, Dwight Gooden for the first one was great, because I love Dwight, but I see Dwight everywhere. Dwight is doing signings, like, everywhere. He's doing one at a wrestling event in November. My son, you know, Jason takes me to the baseball card shows, and my daughter takes me to these wrestling conventions. So they have one. I haven't gone in a year because I hate the locations, like at Hotel LaGuardia. And yep. Dwight Gooden, for some reason, is going to appear at a wrestling show. I mean, LT will be there, but, you know, Lawrence Taylor wrestled at WrestleMania 11. Dwight's got nothing to do with wrestling, but he's going to be there.
Nope. Well, do you remember, who were the guy? Was it WrestleMania 3 that had some football players?
WrestleMania 2 had Colbert. WrestleMania 2 had the Battle Royal with Refrigerator Perry, Russ Francis, Ernie Holmes, Bill Frelick. Yeah.
Jim Culver?
Jimbo Culver was in there? Yeah, he was in the Battle Royal.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, but
it's amazing we remember these things.
Well, you know. I don't remember what I ate yesterday for lunch, but I remember who was in the Battle Royal.
Yeah.
You got to remember the most important things. But yeah, to me, I always say it, you know, running events are crazy and they're stressful, and I'm the type of person who will never be happy with the attendance. You know, I'm the same guy who got 200 people to see Sal the stockbroker at my old synagogue. And I'm like, I feel like there's always that scene in Schindler's List where Schindler, you know, Oscar Schindler saves 1,100 people, and at the end, he's like, "I could have saved more." You know, this button over here, it's gold. I could have gotten one life. This car, I could have. And to me, it's like, I could have gotten more. I mean, we had like 20 something advisors. I want 50. You know, if I have 50, I want 100. But anyway, it was a stressful event. We had one of the sponsors couldn't make it, whatever it is. But the moment when Andre Dawson comes into the room, it all that stress just like goes away, and it's like, I can't believe Andre Dawson's here. I can't believe how great a time people had. And you know, the tour afterwards was fantastic. I didn't get to go to the Citi Field one at our first event because of time and all that stuff. But you know, Wrigley Field and Citi Field, I mean, Wrigley Field's history, and Citi Field's like, oh, it's really beautiful and nice and all that. Wrigley Field's like, it's got like 102 years of history.
Yeah. Well, and that was aside from talking to Andre, and I'm gonna break some news here, okay? So if you guys go back to 1986 and you remember that NL Division Series when the Mets played the Astros and everyone in New York thought Mike Scott scuffed the baseball, well, Andre Dawson confirmed that Mike Scott scuffed the baseball for me. So, in case you guys were wondering, there you have it.
Yeah, my friend Joe, who always goes to these events, he actually asked Andre about 87 when he had that crazy year, which is when at the event I asked him about it, because the story with Andre was he was a free agent and there was baseball collusion, and he wanted a sign, as he says in the event, he wanted a sign at a place where it had natural grass because the knees were killing him because of the Olympic Stadium turf. So he goes to the Chicago Cubs and says, you know, sign me. And the Chicago Cubs is like, oh, we don't need you. And Andre's like, I'm going to give you a blank contract. And he says the story. Dallas Green says, I'll give you $500,000. And he didn't expect Andre to say yes because it was about a 75% pay cut for Andre. And he had this crazy year. So he was telling my friend Joe that I think the manager at the time might have been Gene Michael or 87 might have still been Gene Michael. But anyway, whoever it was wanted Howard Johnson's bat to be looked over because Howard Johnson had that breakout year in 87 where he was 30 for 30, 30 home runs, 30 stolen bases. And as a result, Davey asked for Andre's bat to be examined for cork. And Andre's like, was yelling at Davey, you know, look at my other bats. And he supposedly flexed his muscle at Davey. So, you know, it was a funny story because, we didn't do a whole Q&A, but I just felt like the whole 87 story is just phenomenal because I read about it in books and how Dallas Green really wasn't supposed to sign Andre. He actually had to ask permission and you know, just the incredible story of how Andre wins an MVP for a last place team, which up until that time never happened before.
Has it happened since? I don't think it's happened since.
I don't think it's happened since. It was just such an incredible year that he had. And you know, he's an incredible player. And it was just great to see him. And he was really pleasant with the player, with the attendees. Everybody seemed to have a great time. We'll do it again in Philadelphia. And we'll try to get some more events going in 2019. But yeah, it was a great event. Attendance again, I'll always try to get more people in there. We'll see what we can do with that. But we had some great presentations. You were great. Kravitz was always, I always say when I'm at an event with the folks at Kravitz, they're always the most popular people in the room because, they're talking about this cash balance stuff. And we had a good good presentation on insurance and, missing participants and small account balances and even HSAs from ABG of Illinois, HSAs for advisors. That's something that everybody forgets about, but it's such a great, if you got an advisory book of business, it's just another way to grow assets. And I think that people really forget about that.
Yep.
So that's the next one. I plugged it at the beginning of the show. That's November the 9th. It's Citizens Bank Park, and that will probably be the only event that I will have that I will not wear a jersey from that city because while I own about 90 jerseys, I have one simple rule, no teams from Philly allowed, so I will not be wearing a Phillies jersey. I thought about maybe wearing a Philadelphia Athletics jersey that they have one out there, but I said, forget it. But we're getting Larry Anderson, who, is a really funny guy. I remember when he was a player, he was the guy who was always asking, why do we drive on parkways and park on driveways, and why do they have expiration dates and sour cream and all that, and the Philly Fanatic will be there. And I've been to that stadium. Many years ago, I knew an advisor who actually had an event to plan sponsors, and it was a really great event. I mean, that's one of the reasons for that 401k conference was that experience and that kind of was a part of the idea for, having these events at stadiums because, how many events have you been to where it's at the local hotel, you got food you don't remember, it's just bland or whatever it is. And, to me, going to Wrigley Field or any other stadium and having a tour and meeting somebody, to me, that's more of a memorable experience than anything else. But we'll see with the next one.
Going back to Wrigley, I mean, we got to share some of those fun facts that we learned. During the tour. I mean, I don't know about you, but I came away the whole friendly confine thing is a load of crap. I mean, the Cubs weren't friendly to anybody. a couple of things we learned, guys. We learned that the hitter's eye, so to speak, the blacked out part in center field, so folks can see the baseball coming at them.
They said people sitting there.
Well, yeah, was created because the Cub fans used to sit out there in the bleachers, and when the opposition was hitting, they were wearing white shirts.
Right.
So who's going to see a ball against that background? And then when the Cubbies were up, they'd put on their coats.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting.
But also,
Field one.
Oh, yeah, it came out of left field. And
it came out of left field.
The pennant race came out of that one, too, out of Wrigley Field.
Yeah, there was just so much stuff. They turn off the hot water in the visitors' dugout.
Which is upstairs, which is above ground, because they were worried about flooding from Lake Michigan.
Yep, when they built the park. And then the other one was their dugout is on the third base side, which is usually where the visitors are.
Right.
The reason was because the sun was setting.
Right.
So they wanted the sun to, they were playing day games, and they wanted the sun to set in their visitors' eyes.
Up until 88. Yeah, it was only day games. But it was also funny. We were sitting in section two for that Wednesday night game down the line, and I said, I said to the usher, where's the Bartman seat? And apparently, they had moved. They had cut down on the foul territory back in the old days. Up until about a couple of years ago, the bullpens were on the side, as with a lot of the old stadiums. And then they moved the bullpens now underneath, under the bleachers. And so they actually moved Bartman's seat no longer exists because they moved the seats further out on closer to the field. And so I used to always think they got rid of Bartman's seat because of what Bartman did, but apparently no, it's just the fact that they upgraded the stadium.
Well, and they made good with him, too. They sent him a World Series ring, which we saw the rings. They were pretty elaborate. It was, what, 106 diamonds or something?
Yeah, you saw my friend Aaron from the Cubs, the guy I booked the event with. That was funny because he came in with his ring. I saw him at the game on Wednesday night, and he's showing me the ring, and he gives it to Jason. Jason's like, can I have it? Like, Jason, that's a $21,000 ring. I don't think you can have that. Yeah. But that was pretty cool to say.
Well, he'll pull a Putin on him, right? And
oh, Putin just took it. Putin didn't ask. Putin just took it from Robert Kraft and just, you know. And Robert Kraft's like, oh, this guy's, you know, leader of Russia. I better not. I don't want to start a nuclear confrontation because he stole my ring. And then he tried to say, oh, yeah, well, I gave it to him. No, you know, he just took it. And
just took it and walked right out. Like he was annexing a country or something.
Exactly. So yeah, it was a fun event. You know, I think people learned a lot of new things, and it was a great networking event. And like I said, we'll do it again in November. But I'll have to say, I don't think in my mind, nothing will be quite like Wrigley.
No, well, we'll try. We'll try and make them. I mean, the Philly Fanatic will be pretty cool.
Fanatic. When I saw him, that he was available, I said, you know what, I'm a big fan of mascots. And to me, the funniest thing with the Cubs game is it took me for years to finally meet up with Mr. Met. I want to say after the stadium opened, there was another 5 or 6 years before I saw Mr. Met. I see Clark the Cub the first game I'm at Wrigley Field, and my son took a picture of Clark the Cub.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Life's all about timing, Ari.
Timing is everything. That's what I always say.
It is.
Yeah, so on so the Saturday after, I went because the Mets only go to Fenway once every 6 years because of interleague play, and so I said to my wife, "Oh, let's drive up," and we drove up and we drove down all in one day.
Oh, I've made that trip. That's tiring.
That's tiring, but you know what? I remember many years ago, I did a trip to Albany. I was an associate at that semi-prestigious law firm. And it was my birthday. It was on a Saturday. It was May the 3rd. I had to go to Albany to speak in front of a bunch of teachers at a conference. And, you know, Boston, Albany ain't Boston. You know, Albany to me is, you know, with apologies to people from Albany, is one of my least favorite cities. And the only reason is because I worked at that law firm and that was the only place I ever got to travel. You know, when you're on your own and you travel to San Diego and Vegas and that's great, but
sure.
Albany's Albany. Yeah. So I did the drive.
There's not much to do there.
I did the drive, you know, but Albany, the distance between Albany and Long Island, it's not like Albany, you know, Boston and Long Island. So we got there. We got there early. The game was starting at 4. I think we got there at 1. And you know, with my son Jason, with his food, he's a big Shake Shack fan. So.
Yep.
You know, he always will ask, is there a Shake Shack at the stadium? And unfortunately, there are only 3 major league stadiums that have Shake Shack. Citi Field, Nationals Park, and Minute Maid Field. So I knew they opened up a Shake Shack at Newbury Street. So I park right by Fenway, a block, pay $40 parking, which, you know, it's a lot of money. But anyway, I walk to Kenmore Square, and who do I run into? I run into Keith Hernandez.
Oh, wow.
And I say, hey, Keith, how are you? And, you know, my wife's like, why are you yelling at him? And I didn't get a picture with Keith because I see Keith a lot more than most of my relatives, which is a good thing if you know my relatives. And, you know, I like Keith and my relatives are a whole nother story. So I just saw Keith, you know, and I usually don't yell out to people that I see that are famous. Like, you know, a couple months back I was at Broadway. I saw Matthew Broderick standing by the red light because he was riding a bike, and I say, "Hey, Matthew," and that's it. But usually, I don't bother. But Keith, I bother Keith because I've seen Keith like this year alone. I've seen Keith 3 times. So we walk to Newbury Street. He gets his Shake Shack, and then we get to go to the game. And the funny thing is, the 7 line was there, and they had about 2,000 fans almost. They were sitting, we were in the bleachers, like center field bleachers. They were, uh, They were in right field in the corner. They had like 2,000 fans, and it was so many Mets fans. And I remember back in the day, the bleachers at Fenway was a scary sight. You know, I remember, you know, going to a Patriots game, a Patriots Day game at 11 a.m. and people getting tossed left and right. And I guess now because the Sox are doing well and ticket prices have really have increased, a lot of the riffraff, you know, the drunk guys who would go to the games, they can't afford the games anymore. So it was really, nobody bothered us. So many Mets fans. Mets lost because, you know, they put in Paul Sewald into the game, which is an automatic loss. He's worse than Doug Sisk ever was. At least Doug Sisk, you know, was good in 84 up until a point. Sewald, you know, if the game is within 5 runs, they should not put him in. But otherwise, we had a great time, and it took us 3.5 hours to get back. That's how good it was.
Well, isn't there a rest stop along, what is it, the Mass Pike? I think there's a McDonald's up there that serves lobster rolls.
Oh, sure there is. I it was like 7:40 at night, and I'm like, I want to get the heck out of here. And, you know, just...
Oh, no, I understand.
Yeah, he had the Shake Shack. I don't... it was just funny. I'm a big Sam Adams guy, and Sam Adams is now the official beer of Fenway Park. But I couldn't find one place that had Sam Adams Lager. They were pushing that Sam Adams 76, which is a cross between an ale and a lager that my wife likes. But I didn't want to go.
What about the Oktoberfest? Was that up?
No, they did not. They had summer ale still up. I'm like, you guys don't even have a... You know, so anyway, I had a summer ale in the right field up on the roof. They actually have this whole Sam Adams, like, restaurant tavern outside, and I didn't get to go to it. So next time I go to Fenway, I gotta do that. But we wanted, you know, that 401k conference when we're doing Philly, I wanted that to be in Boston. But Boston Fenway, the money to host the event over there is crazy. I mean, they want like a $10,000 minimum food charge, which is almost the price of an event, and it's just like $10,000. What are we serving? Prime rib and lobsters, whatever, caviar. But hopefully we'll get to Fenway one of these days for the conference. So last things, let's probably conclude with, you got any crazy retirement plan stories in your practice, in your experience?
I mean, we've had a couple of crazy plan sponsors that, you know, thought they knew more. I've got a good one. We had a plan that for 2 years they were pulling loan repayments and never submitted them in the payroll file. So that was, you know, that the auditors love that. And that actually is more prevalent than you'd think. For whatever reason, there are a lot of folks out there in the HR world that just don't know how to enter them into payroll. So we've seen that a few times. Inevitably, whenever we send out a notice, people think they have money in their 401k plan. You know, so you have to send out those mandatory notices to folks that are participate or that might not be participating, but they're active, they're eligible. So we'll field a few calls every year around notice time, asking about their balances, and we'll pull them up, and they've never contributed a dollar to the plan. So
yeah, I mean loans I've always found to be a big disaster, and you know. I remember we took over a plan years ago, and they had like 8 loans. Participants had like 8 loans outstanding, and it's just like, I don't know how anybody could ever administer that and make sure every single loan is paid without it somehow falling through the cracks and defaulting and all that stuff. It's
a challenge.
It's just amazing.
It's a challenge.
So let me see, 401k crazy stories. I'll tell the one that I told in Chicago, which I always think it gets a laugh. The crazy stuff that you, when you're working at a TPA, and I've written about it, but my two favorite stories, I had one guy, I'll just talk about the salesperson who, actually, well, she wasn't a salesperson, she was in fiduciary review services, so she was an advisor, she had a license. And she would go to the client. We were producing TPA every, you know, quarter, every 6 months to go over the fund lineup and all that kind of stuff and what's going on with the plan and A issues, whatever. So she calls me up and she says, Ari, this plan has an age 60 in-service provision for in-service distributions. What's the difference between that and a 59 and a half in-service distribution? And, you know, I'm a smart aleck, so I told her the truth, 6 months. I mean, that's the difference. And I don't think she understood that line, but, you know, that's really, you know, it's the same provision, except it's 6 months later. You take it at 60 instead of 59 and a half. And, of course, my favorite story about her was that time when we wanted to start up a MEP for independent gas stations. And the advisor that we were working with liked her for some reason or another. And they, my friend Rich, the salesperson, brought her along, and they had apparently this independent gas owners association, whatever it is. They actually had a lobbyist on staff to lobby the state government in Albany. And he was, you know, impressed with her and all that. And he asked her, oh, so where are you from? And she says, oh, I'm from Yonkers. And he says, oh, you know, that's the second biggest city of New York. And she says, what's the first? Because anybody knows that, you know, there's this little city in New York called New York City, the five boroughs, you know, got about 8 million people. So, yes, that is the biggest city in New York. So I think we'll conclude with that. We'll save some, you know, stories for next time. Dan is going to be hopefully a big part of the show. He's really entertaining and funny as heck. So we'll bring him hopefully back for some more. So I want to thank Dan again. Dan, give another plug, shameless plug to your website and how they could reach you.
Yep, thanks, Ari. Thanks for the time, everyone. It's been a blast. Looking forward to talking to you guys again in the future. We're at www.brightworks.com, two X's, most interesting 316 in the world. shameless Dos Equis reference there.
Yeah.
But give us a call at 1-866-316-7326, and we'll talk to you guys soon.
Okay, so this is Ari Rosenbaum, and I want to steal a line from the great Edward R. Murrow. Good night and good luck.
Wake up, kid. It's half past the youth. Ain't nothing really changing but the dates. You a grand slammer, but you know, Babe Ruth. You gotta love